Greetings and salutations, folks. Welcome back to this episode of Indie Cornrows Courtside. We're being joined by Alex Kennedy of Hoops World, a USA Today property. Alex, always writing on basketball, so it's good to take a little bit of time out of your schedule and get you here with us. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure's all mine. It's great to have somebody up from USA Today who's not only fine to talk about the Pacers, but he's even familiar with the team after all the dry spell they went through before these past couple years. I just want to get started off. The Hoops World Preview came out on the 21st of September, Pacers being picked first or second in the Central Division, and I think you had them first. That's music to a lot of fans' ears. Can you explain why?
Well, I think, this young core is continuing to improve every single year. Obviously, Paul George made the big step last year. Roy Hibbert showed what he can do in the postseason by dominating some games. And then, this offseason was really strong for the Pacers. They went out and really improved their bench by adding Luis Scola, T.J. Watson, Chris Copeland. So a team that really didn't have to make many moves went out and, had a great offseason anyway. I think if any team can challenge Miami in the Eastern Conference, Indiana's right there. Obviously, they gave them a seven-game scare during last year's postseason. But this is a team that has played well against Miami in recent years, and they don't seem to be scared of the big three on the Heat. I think they feel like they have a shot to knock them off. Miami looks vulnerable. They've been able to win two straight titles, but they've had plenty of game sevens along the way, whether it was against Indiana or San Antonio or Boston. So, this could be the year that a team like Indiana rises up and represents the Eastern Conference in the finals. It's definitely possible they have the pieces.
I've listened to a lot of NBA guys talk about this. I think most recently it was Mark Stein, probably on Bill Simmons' podcast, at the end of the Miami Heat title defense, saying how difficult it is to go three straight years and saying that this is the season that it would make sense for the Heat to let up off that, just off their hold on the rest of the league that they've held for the last 2 years. Does that have something to do with it, that the Miami Heat have got to be a little worn down? They've played as many games, really, as they can over the past 2 years. It's just so hard to defend a title in today's NBA. How much does that have to do with it?
Yeah, I think people forget that when you're playing in two straight, when you're winning two straight titles and you played in three straight finals, your season is much longer than most players. Your off season is much shorter. So as we've looked at this Miami team and all the injuries they've had, that can be a part of it. They've had some very long seasons. Obviously, LeBron has also played in the Olympics. It's been kind of tough on these guys. So you look at that, and then you look at the fact that the Eastern Conference is improving around them, not just Indiana, but also Brooklyn, New York, Chicago gets Derrick Rose back. These teams are really looking good around Miami, and they've made some great offseason moves. Obviously, they're getting some players back. So I think it's a combination of things. I think also when you've won two straight championships, players tend to get a little bit complacent. You're not as hungry as some of the other teams, whereas some of these teams haven't won anything, and they're still determined to try to get that first ring. When you've won two straight, I think Mark Stein's right. You tend to let your foot off the gas a little bit, and you're not as hungry as other players. And then also, I think the injuries and the decline of some players is really going to hurt Miami this season. Obviously, we saw Dwayne Wade get beat up last year, and he was real limited, especially in the postseason. At one point, he's taping his kneecap up just so he could play. He had a lot of injuries, and if he continues to decline, that's going to make things very tough on Miami. A lot of their players, a lot of core around LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are much older. When you look at Shane Battier, Ray Allen, Chris Anderson, these are guys that are towards the end of their career. So, they could really have some issues when it comes to these guys declining or facing injuries. Whereas some of these teams, like Indiana, are up and coming. Their best basketball is still ahead of them. So it's going to be an interesting year in the Eastern Conference. I think in the past years, Miami was obviously the top-tier team, way ahead of everyone else. This year, there are definitely some teams that could challenge them, and the task at hand for them is very difficult.
I'm going to preface this by saying that it's obviously a Pacers podcast on a Pacers-centric blog, on a Pacers-centric site. But last week, one of the podcast topics was asking if the Pacers had the chance to be the best team in the NBA, which is something the Pacer fans have been reluctant to even ask. The Miami Heat made a move that scared me when they added Greg Oden. Even if he's not ready now, that's a playoff-type move. The Brooklyn Nets only got better, and the Pacers had major trouble with them last year. The Bulls have Derrick Rose back, and he looked pretty dynamite in his first preseason game, all things considered. And he's only going to get better the more comfortable he gets. What's the layout of the Eastern Conference? It's very top-heavy to my view, and it looks like the Pacers are going to have a strong level of competition, even with as much better as they've gotten this offseason.
Yeah, it is very top-heavy, and I don't think it would surprise anyone if one of those four teams ended up winning it all. You know, Miami obviously can do it. Indiana has the pieces. Like you said, Chicago looks scary, and they've always been scary when they're at full strength. And Brooklyn, you know, they're trying to win right now by bringing in Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. You know, their window is obviously much smaller than it was even last year. So all these teams really want to, win it all this year, and I think they all have the pieces to do so. You know, as far as Indiana being able to be the best team in the NBA, it's certainly possible. It really depends on, you know, what Danny Granger can do trying to, you know, mesh with last year's starters and what the second unit can provide. You know, last year, that was definitely a weakness for the Pacers. When that second unit came in, there was a huge drop-off. Now, you know, with Spola and Copeland and Watson, you know, that may not be the case. And you know, obviously moving Lance Stephenson to the bench as well, that could actually be a strength for them. They went from being a weak bench to, you know, maybe one of the best benches in the league if all these guys played their full potential. So Indiana has the pieces, like I said. And also, I think, you know, we can expect some internal improvement again from Paul George and Roy Hibbert. These guys are still very young. I think people forget that. You know, we haven't seen their best basketball, I don't think. They're going to continue to improve. And, you know, if that's the case, then this Pacers team could really turn some heads and go all the way. It really wouldn't surprise me. I'm a huge fan of this Pacers team. I love the way that they've been built. They have so many different pieces that can contribute and, you know, lead the team each night. So I think it's definitely possible. And if it's not this year, maybe the year after when you know, Paul George and Roy Hibbert are probably reaching their prime, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see the Pacers hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy at some point in the near future.
If they're going to do it this year, they need Danny Granger. Is that something that's fair to say? I'm a little worried about Granger. I don't think the Pacer fans have had it covered adequately in the local market, just how big a deal Granger's knee injury last year was. It was something that the organization kept pretty close to the vest, and as soon as it came out that, and I guess they didn't know because they didn't make a move at the trade deadline. They were expecting Granger to be an acquisition, and then they had to shut him down after two or three games. I saw something up on Hoops World, speak of the devil, that there's some question around the league whether or not Danny Granger will be able to get through a wear and tear season, 82 games plus playoffs, with the specific knee issue that he has, patellar tendinosis, I believe is the pronunciation. It's a knee deal that is chronic. It's over time. And I'm a little worried because we have not seen top-level Danny Granger in about 2 years. He still doesn't look like his old self. How long will that take?
Well, that's a great question. Actually, when he was going through the pre-draft process, there were some teams that had identified his knee as being an issue, and they basically said that, you know, it may not affect him right now, but down the road it's going to be something he has to battle, and it could shorten his career. So this has been something that's been around for a while, even dating back to when he was going through the pre-draft process. So it's really interesting. I'm curious to see how it affects him. You know, he says that he's feeling better, and he hopes to, you know, play the whole season, but like you said, it's something that he's going to be battling for a while. It's a chronic thing, so he may have to shut it down again this season at some point if it becomes an issue. You know, you really can't tell what's going to happen until we see him get out on the court and really test it. You know, last year they didn't think it was as bad as it was. And then once the trade deadline passed and the season kind of progressed, they looked at the knee and realized it was much more severe than they expected or thought. And that's why they had to shut him down. So hopefully, you know, after taking a whole year off, he's able to get out there and play a little bit. I think the good thing for this team is that last year they saw that they don't really need Granger as much as they did in previous years because because other guys stepped up. You know, Paul George obviously had the huge breakout season. Roy Hibbert took the next step in his game. Lance Stevenson improved a lot. I think it was good for a lot of the young guys because they were able to step up and take on larger roles. So this team isn't nearly as dependent on Granger's health as they have been in years past when he was the leading scorer and really the best player on the team. So I think that's good for this young team that they were able to do that. But it is up in the air what they're going to get from Granger, what we're going to see from him. You know, it's possible that he could be healthy again and have a full season. But again, it's possible he could be shut down. We really don't know until he gets out there. You know, and he could be a trade chip too. That's another thing. You know, he may not be on this roster the entire year. If he is able to play well earlier in the year, you know, maybe Indiana tries to trade his expiring contract and see what they can get for him. You know, I think that's definitely something that could be an option as well. So really, his you know, status and his future with the team even is up in the air at this point. So we'll see what happens. I'm just as curious as everyone else to see how he plays and how he stays healthy. I think obviously if he's healthy, this Pacers team is better because also it gives them the option of trading him. But you know, we'll see what happens.
I think it's interesting that even if he's not healthy, this Pacer team is better than they were last year, in my opinion, once everything gels. Last year's group took a while to get acquainted with each other, but they were an outstanding unit as soon as Roy Hibbert's wrist got healthy and he stopped shooting 38% from the floor. This season, this time around, I think with the bench adjustments that they've made, they're a better team. I'm worried about Granger coming in, trying to get it going, and the Pacers being stuck with 80% Danny Granger throughout the season. Are they better off figuring out early what they have with Granger? Is it worth it trying to get him going for 60 games, if that's what it takes, rather than working with the guys they have? They've got Watson, they've got Copeland who could play that spot, the rookie Solomon Hill. Is Danny Granger really that much of an upgrade over those guys if he's not 100%?
That's a great question, too. It really depends what percent he's playing at. But I think, you know, he's at the point in his career now where he's had injuries, he's getting older. I think if he does come back, he has to realize that it's not his team anymore and kind of take a step back and let Paul George and Roy Hibbert be the main options. You know, at one point he was an all-star and they were asking him to do a ton. But now I think he's at the point where, you know, he needs to understand his role and really let the other guys kind of step up and lead. I don't think you have to worry about him coming in and, you know, trying to take over, even if he's not 100%, and try to, you know, put up a lot of shots. I think if you're Frank Vogel at that point, you know, maybe you consider putting him on the bench or you have a talk with him and basically say, you know, you're not 100% right now. You need to take a step back. So I think that's an option. But I think he's still an upgrade over Copeland and Hill at this point. You know, those are guys that aren't nearly they're more one-dimensional, I think, than Granger. They aren't nearly as well-rounded as him. So I think if he can be on the floor and he's, you know, close to 100%, then, you know, you try to keep him out there and see what you can get from him. But expecting him to be your best player and, you know, leading scorer, I think that's a bit much. So that's where, you know, he needs to understand that, and the coaching staff needs to do a good job of making that clear to him so that he doesn't go into the season thinking that's going to be his role. It's kind of similar to what we're seeing with Amari Stoudemire in New York, where, you know, in the past he was the all-star, he was the main option. And you know, in recent years with the injuries he's had and with the decline of his game, you know, they've had to put him on the bench and basically, you know, let him know that this Carmelo Anthony's team now. You're not going to be the first option or even second option on most nights. I think we're going to see a similar thing with Granger in Indiana. But, you know, like I said, if he is able to be close to 100%, then, you know, that's a huge upgrade for Indiana, and that's definitely something that's going to help them as they try to win the championship this year and go on a deep postseason run.
Alex, I might have to censor that last part because I'm pretty sure you just made some Pacer fans throw up in their mouths with the Amari Stoudemire comparison. I remember specifically being in Banker's Life for either, I can't remember which game it was, but whichever one it was, when Copeland was on the floor with the Knicks, Pacer fans were actually scared. When Amari got out there, you took a deep sigh of relief. And I'm really worried about that being the case with Granger. You just made me feel less confident about it than I even was before, and I was a little shaky. I'm going to change the subject because I don't want to talk about that anymore. I'd rather talk about the actual best player on the Pacers, Paul George, who just signed a contract extension back in mid-September. Talk about what you've seen from him, just watching from afar the development of a player who's getting ready to go into his fourth year in the league and is already being paid like a multi-time All-Star. And he's going to be a long-time player in this league if he can stay healthy, which he's shown no indications that he can't do. He's been really the full package since he arrived in Indiana.
Yeah, well, I love Paul George's game. I think, you know, what he's been able to do at such a young age is really impressive. And I give the Pacers, you know, tons of credit for finding him. You know, went to a small school, and, you know, where they drafted him was very impressive. You know, they saw his upside potential before a lot of people did. So, and then they worked with him to develop him, too. So, you know, they've done an excellent job with him. But I'm a huge fan of his game. He's one of those guys that can just dominate with his athleticism. He can score from many different parts of the floor. He's very hard to stop. You know, he's a great defender as well. He's someone that can really do it all. And to be 23 years old and be that effective is very impressive. Last year, obviously, was a big breakout campaign for him because it was his third year. You know, you often see that with guys in the NBA in their third season where they take that next step and break out. He was able to do that because he was finally acclimated and comfortable playing in the league. And I think confidence had a big part of it, a big reason for it as well. You know, he was really able to step up and gain that confidence as the Pacers' number one option. You know, I think earlier in his career, he felt like he had to defer to some guys, but last year we didn't see that at all. I think he really came into his own, and he knew it, so he was willing to take over games. And, you know, what he was able to do throughout the year was very impressive. And like I said, I mean, I think, you know, his best basketball is still ahead of him. It's kind of scary to think that he could still be, you know, 4 or 5 years away from his prime. He's only 23 years old. So I'm really looking forward to see how he develops. And seeing, you know, if he can take that next step this year. I think if you look at the top small forwards in the league, he's capable of being right up there with some of the best guys. Obviously, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, those are the top guys right now. But, you know, he's significantly younger than those guys. So, you know, he can really dominate that position for years to come. And it's going to be exciting to watch him develop. You know, Pacers fans are lucky to be able to watch him every night because not many teams have a star that's as dynamic and dominant as he is on both ends of the court. So, you know, we'll see how he develops, but I'm a huge fan of his game.
And as a fan base that loved and appreciated Reggie Miller, the Pacers have never had a guy with the potential to be what Paul George can be. That's what makes me a little hesitant to say this. I feel like I might be on my own here. But watching everyone anoint Paul George as a star last year during the playoff series against Miami, as somebody who watched just about every game last year, he did not show that at all on a consistent basis. It's good that he rose to the occasion. But this is a guy who shot well under 45% from the floor. He didn't shoot from three as well as he had. A lot of it was trying to grow into that role. But there's a part of me that gets a little nervous and wonders, is this coming a little too early for Paul George, or are people piling on too many high expectations for this season?
Yeah, that's a fair question, but I think a lot of it, like you said, was him kind of growing into that role. It was his first year being the guy, and that's never easy, especially when you're a young guy like he is. You know, or like I said, earlier in his career, he had deferred, and he hadn't been the main option. You know, I covered him during each of his playoff series. And I remember the one series against Miami 2 years ago where he really struggled and couldn't do much. And you know, he was just feeling awful because he couldn't contribute and help the team. And then, you know, he went home during the offseason and watched film of the games. And he, you know, was sick because he didn't do anything during the series. And he really wanted to come out this last season and really contribute and become a better player. But even he didn't expect to be, you know, number one option and really step up and be a star this past year until Danny Granger went down. And I think then he kind of realized that he had to step into that role. So I think it was some growing pains throughout last year. I think also, you know, when it's your third year in the league, you're comfortable and you're acclimated, but you have to take on a huge role like that and become a focal point. You know, it's difficult, and you have to approach the game differently. And I think that's part of the reason why he wasn't as consistent. He was still learning how to be that number one option and lead scorer and, you know, star player. So this year, it's going to be interesting to see if that consistency is there. Now there's really no excuse. He's had a year where he had time to kind of grow into the role. You know, it culminated in that great playoff series. So his confidence should be at an all-time high. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can take that next step this year and become more consistent and get those shooting percentages up. If he does it this year, then I think some of those concerns that you have will probably be erased because, he would show that he's able to be more consistent and take on that role and that, some of the growing pains that he had faced are gone. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does this year. I think that's going to really be a good indicator of his career trajectory and what kind of path he's on.
And I would love nothing more. Let him check all the boxes. I want to have a transcendent NBA superstar in Indianapolis.
I'm sure, yeah. Like I said, not many teams can be excited about a guy like that. And, you know, he has the upside, so we'll see what he can do. You know, the good thing is he has a great work ethic. I've had the chance to spend a few off seasons with him. He trains down to L.A. sometimes. And the guy works extremely hard. So it's always good to see a guy who has those natural gifts and that athleticism still working hard. You know, some guys, because they have that advantage over every other player, they feel like they don't have to work hard during the off season or, you know, study film and put in the time it takes to get better. But he's willing to do that. He's a very hard worker. He learned that from Danny Granger working out with him earlier in his career, and I think that's a good sign for Pacers fans because he's a guy that's always going to be trying to improve his game. That's definitely something good. Not only does he have the athleticism and natural gifts, but the insane work ethic is a plus as well.
Roy Hibbert is another guy who's an outstanding worker, and he's gotten some pub recently for the time he's spent with Tim Duncan working out down in San Antonio. What can his expectations be? He flashed something in the postseason that I personally had always hoped/expected from Hibbert, somebody who could be, in extended minutes, a 17-10-3 guy, and he was every bit of that. He was dominant. Can he do that for a full season?
That's going to be tough. 17-10-3 is pretty difficult.
Okay, that might have been a little can he be that similar type of presence without necessarily the statistics? I think that is a little much to ask.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can. He's shown it, and like I said, he's another guy who should be, feeling very confident going into this year based on how he played in the postseason. And confidence is so big in the NBA. If you feel like you're the most dominant player when you step on the court each night, it's definitely going to help you. And I think he's definitely going to enter this season feeling good about himself. But it's going to be tough, against some teams. I think against Miami it was a little bit easier because they didn't have the inside presence to really go against him. Chris Anderson was down low and a few other guys, but they don't really have a great big man as we've seen in recent years. So, it's going to be tough for him to duplicate that success that he had just because he wasn't really playing against anyone in that Miami series. But I think he can get close to it. I think on most nights, he can be the most dominant big man on the floor. He's shown in the past that he can be a very good player. You know, he was an all-star a few years ago, and last year, like you said, in spurts, he was very good. So it's going to be interesting. He's still a guy who has plenty of room to develop. He's obviously a little bit older than Paul George, at 26, but I think he still has some room. NBA centers often develop a little bit slower than perimeter players, so at 26, he's still very young for a big man, and his best basketball is probably still ahead of him as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how he develops. I think he could definitely become a very good interior presence. And really, if you look around the league right now, the argument for the best big man in the league is kind of up in the air. Dwight Howard took a step back last year and was beaten up a lot of the year. Marcus Gasol played pretty well, but Hibbert's definitely in that discussion. And if he continues to develop and become more consistent and really improve all aspects of his game, he could definitely be right up there when you have that argument.
Yeah, I'm looking now for the first time in a while at his numbers in the Miami series. I didn't mean to imply that he would replicate those, because obviously 22-10-1 on 56% shooting is not just an all-star. He's the best big man in the league. And I think that's a lot to expect from Roy Hibbert on a night-to-night basis, but I'm looking at his Atlanta numbers and his New York numbers, which, minus the blocks, which got ridiculous, seem to be attainable, like 15-8, 15-9. It seems like those are types of numbers that he can get to, especially when you look at David West on the floor. You got Paul George, Lance Stephenson, who I want to get to. I want to ask you this. Do the Pacers have the best starting lineup in the league? They've charted very well the last two seasons with their starters on the floor.
Yeah, they're definitely one of the better starting lineups. I think Miami, when they're at full strength, is still probably the best. You know, when Dwayne Wade was healthy in the beginning of last year, he was playing at a very high level. He was able to fill the stat sheet still. It was only towards the end of the season and the postseason when he really declined and couldn't do much. So when Dwayne Wade is playing like he was early last year, you know, where he's putting up 25, 5, and 5, obviously LeBron James is the best player on the planet. And Chris Bosh, you know, he's still capable of playing well some nights. I know you guys didn't see much of it since he was horrible during the Indiana series, but he is capable of playing well against some opponents. So, you know, those three, I think, put Miami above Indiana and a few other teams. You know, when you look at Brooklyn, they obviously are in that conversation as well, since every single member of their starting lineup has been to an All-Star game, you know, as well as their sixth man in Andre Kirilenko. So they're pretty loaded as well, but a lot of those guys are older, obviously. Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, they're not in their prime. Joe Johnson isn't the player that he once was. So, you know, they've taken a little bit of a step back as they've gotten older. But it's an interesting question. You know, Indiana definitely, I would say they have one of the best up-and-coming lineups in the league. I think, you know, all the other teams we talked about are on the decline a little bit. You know, whereas Indiana, they're definitely going to keep improving in the coming years, you know, barring injuries. So I'm excited to see this Indiana team come together and continue to play together. They're definitely in that conversation. But like I said, I think Miami, when they're at full strength, they're probably number one. But it is a great question. They're definitely up there.
I want to change topic a little bit because the Pacers and Bulls had a tilt the other night. Derrick Rose's return, we mentioned that before. Goodness knows we've seen enough Adidas commercials about it. It's good to see him actually on the floor again, though maybe we don't have to see so many of those. He had himself a decent night, and there were a couple vintage D. Rose moments in his first real playing time in quite a while, and Taj Gibson had himself a 9-12 night, which didn't hurt things either. It's one of those games that I looked at, and obviously it's preseason basketball, but an 82-76 final was a little ugly, a little slow, a little up and down. Have people counted out the Bulls a little too early?
Yeah, I think so. I think people are forgetting just how good this team can be when they're at full strength. You know, Tom Thibodeau's an excellent coach, and last year he was able to get a lot out of his players, but, and, you know, and they were able to obviously knock out Brooklyn, which is more than anyone expected, you know, given the injury issues they had. But when this team is at full strength, they're a legitimate contender, and you know, they when Derrick Rose was the MVP, and even years after that, they were a 60-win team. They challenged Miami during the regular season, and they finished ahead of Miami one year and led the Eastern Conference with the best record. So this is a very good team. When Derrick Rose is playing his full potential, they're scary. And I think he's going to get back to that point this year. You know, there are some people saying that he's actually better now than he was before the injury because he's been working on his jump shot, because he's been, you know, doing so many different rehab exercises and strength exercises that he claims his vertical leap has gotten better by 5 inches. So, you know, this is a guy that looked great in that preseason game, and this is a guy that's capable of dominating on most nights. You know, he's one of the best point guards in the league. Obviously, he has an MVP award in his trophy case, so that says something about his game, especially considering he won it over LeBron James, although it was a year when, you know, everyone hated LeBron. But still, I think this team could be very good. I was very impressed with Rose during that preseason game. You know, he didn't lose any of his quickness or speed. We saw him get out in transition a few times and just beat everyone down the floor. We saw him finish at the rim a few times, which is impressive. He didn't seem to be holding back at all, which is sometimes what you see from players who are returning after an injury because they don't want to get hurt again. But that didn't seem to be the case. So he played very well, and I think he could be poised for a huge season, and that would really mean the Bulls are a contender again. It's going to be really interesting because, like I said, there are so many teams in the Eastern Conference this year that could go to the finals. You know, Miami, Chicago, Brooklyn, there are so many good teams. Chicago's definitely up there, so we'll see what they do. I do think that Rose is going to come back and be his normal self. He'll return to form this year, and that can mean very good things for Chicago.
And just looking at their lineup, I like Butler. Jimmy Butler made a name for himself last year. They brought in Dunleavy. He was a good pacer when he was here. I think people grew a little tired of him. But Mike Dunleavy can play, especially in the role that the Bulls are going to ask him to take. And Taj Gibson, you got Nazi Muhammad in a limited role coming off the bench. They've got a lot of depth. I think a surprising amount, and a little more than they had even last year.
Yeah, I think this is the best team that Derrick Rose has played with. he really hasn't had a dominant shooting guard next to him. I think Jimmy Butler, he's kind of poised to take that Paul George kind of leap this year. That's what he's looking to do. It's his third year in the league, so, you know, he could really make that next step and become a scary player. He's always been a very good perimeter defender and a pretty efficient scorer, but I think, you know, he could really break out this year. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he did that. He worked really hard over the offseason, and he kind of expanded his game. So I'm curious to see how he can play. I think he's really going to benefit from playing alongside Derrick Rose, too, because, you know, Rose is excellent at attacking the rim and then kicking out the shooters and creating opportunities for his teammates. So, you know, Butler could really have a good year, and that's going to make things easier for Chicago as well if he's another guy that can step up and help them win games. I think Joe can know even. He really stepped up and improved since we last saw Derrick Rose. He's taken his game to another level. He really is the reason that they won that series against Brooklyn last year, because he just had some huge games, even though he was injured. So this is the best Noah that Rose has played with as well. And then you mentioned it, you know, they bring in Dunleavy. Gibson has played much better now. You know, he's still a very young player with Rose's last company. So he's going to take his game to another level. And they have a lot of pieces. You know, I think this bench is even better than the bench when they had Kyle Korver and Ronnie Brewer and C.J. Watson a few years ago. You know, they definitely have a lot of depth. So Rose has said it himself that he hasn't had this much talent on his team. And I think he's right. You know, this Bulls team is very good around him.
The Pacers' only other preseason game to this point came this morning at 7:30 Eastern time because they're over in Manila. And they got thumped by the Houston Rockets. Gives us a chance to talk about the West. How good is Houston? What's that outlook look like? I really like this Rockets team.
Yeah, I like the Rockets team, too. I think, James Harden last year showed that he's an elite scorer, averaging over 25 points per game. And he did it efficiently, too. You know, he was only taking 17 shots a night, which is really impressive. And a lot of that was because he was able to get to the free throw line and knocked down 85% of his jumpers. And he took smart shots, too. You know, a lot of players in that situation where he had a green light to shoot would just put up, you know, 20-plus shots. But he didn't do that. He took smart shots. He often made the right basketball play, and he played really efficiently. So I think Harden is going to have a very long, successful career as a scorer. I really like his game. And, you know, he's excellent at getting out in transition and playing the pick and roll. He can just do so much. He can finish at the rim, too. You know, despite the fact that he's not the most athletic guy on the floor, he has the Euro step and he can finish around guys and finish with contact. So he's definitely a guy to watch. I think, he's still young too. People forget that. And I think he could be someone that elevates his game to an even other level this year, especially with Dwight Howard. You know, Dwight Howard is going to take away some of his shots, but he also creates opportunities. I think people forget how good Dwight Howard was before this past year when he kind of struggled. But I think last year, the reason Howard was limited was because he had the back injury that he came into the season with, then he had the shoulder injury. So he really was never at 100%. But, you know, I covered Dwight Howard in Orlando for his entire career before he moved on to L.A., and he's just a dominant center. He's capable of, destroying guys on both ends of the floor. He requires a double team down low. People forget that he was a three-time Defensive Player of the Year winner. This is a guy that can beat you in so many different ways and take over a game on both ends of the floor. It was always so difficult because I would want to do stories on opposing centers when they came through. And it was always so tough because after the game, you could never get any good quotes from them because they were in such a bad mood because usually they had their worst game of the season against Dwight Howard. You know, they'd finish with 3-4 points and they'd be really frustrated. And that's just what Dwight Howard does to opposing big men. You know, that's the reason there was no argument or conversation about who the best big man in the center was a few years ago, because it was obviously Dwight Howard and everyone was a rung or two below him. If he can get back to that level, then this Houston team is going to be very scary. I think the Rockets have done a great job of surrounding him with shooters. Pairing him with Harden is going to be excellent. You know, Dwight has never really had a scorer like Harden. He's a very unique guy. They tried to pair him with Vince Carter, then Gilbert Arenas, a few guys like that when he was in Orlando. But, you know, it never worked out. So I'm curious to see how that inside-outside duo works. And I think Jeremy Lin is someone that, you know, a lot of people criticize, but he's still a very young guy, too, and he's still developing his game. I think he's an above-average point guard who could take the next step this year. And I think he's going to benefit from playing with Howard and Harden as well. He has a lot of offensive weapons to work with now, too. So I think Lin could be kind of an X-factor for them. Chandler Parsons, obviously, is a consistent contributor. You know, he's someone that can make an impact on both ends of the floor. And then, you know, they have a pretty strong bench as well. So this Houston team could be very good. And I think the best thing about them is that, you know, their window is wide open. They could definitely, you know, contend this year and then for years to come.
I like Houston. I like Golden State. I think they're in a similar boat. We've kept you for a while, Alex. I want to thank you for coming on. Before we let you go, one last question. If I can put you on the spot and ask for your top four in order, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, what are your standings at the end of the year based on what we know today?
That's tough. For the Eastern Conference, I'll say Miami finishes number one. I'll put Indiana number two, Brooklyn number three, and then Chicago number four. You know, that's how I think it would finish. I think those are the top four teams. And then when I look at the Western Conference, that's a little bit more difficult. You know, it's kind of up in the air at this point. I'll say Oklahoma City finishes number one. I'll say San Antonio finishes two, L.A. Clippers three, and then Houston four. Mm-hmm. And those are just the top four teams, like you said, as we see them today. That could obviously change, you know, barring injuries and mid-season moves, but you know, those are my top four in each conference as of today.
The love for the Clippers is surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of what the Clippers have done. I think they're a team that could contend this year. Blake Griffin has really developed his game, and he's been really impressive from what I've heard early on. So, you know, if he can do that, then obviously you have Chris Paul, best point guard in the league. Doc Rivers is really going to help them. I think, you know, Vinny Del Negro really struggled with that team last year. I think you can make the argument that he was one of the worst coaches in the league last year. So bringing in Doc Rivers, I mean, that's just going to be a huge upgrade as well. And, you know, last year they had a pretty deep team, but I think this team is even deeper. They were able to add a lot of guys to that bench. And I think Rivers is going to do an excellent job using those pieces, a much better job than Del Negro did. So I think the Clippers could definitely be a team that surprises people this year and goes deep in the playoffs, even though last year they were a first-round exit.
I'm a little worried about their defense, but that might be another conversation for another time. Alex, thanks again for coming on. Before we let you go, anything to plug, promote, or pimp?
Well, I'm writing three times a week over at Hoops World, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We'll be writing the NBA PM over there, and that drops at 5 p.m. Eastern time. As you mentioned earlier, we have the season preview on newsstands now. And you can pick that up on any newsstand. It really has a lot of great content in it. You know, we have a team preview for every single team in the league. We have some great articles, and we have some, you know, player rankings, a look ahead at the 2014 draft class. It's just a great read. You know, the guys over at USA Today did an excellent job on that, so you should definitely pick that up. Then I hold my weekly chat this Saturday, and then from then on, it'll be every single Wednesday at 3 p.m., so you know, come by, drop me a question, and I'll do my best to answer it.
Busy guy. Alex, thanks for taking the time out of your day to join us.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Have fun.
Thank you. Will do. That's all the time we have here at Indy Cornrows Courtside. For Alex Kennedy, this is Pierce Cavanaugh saying so long, travel well, until we meet again.